This is continuing live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Okay, Dr. Tepa Sanchez, is it normal between co-workers at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital to discuss patients as nicknames such as Ketamine Girl or other nicknames?
We don't. If it's we're doing it over our personal phones, if we have to or we do, we don't like to put their names. It's an identifier. So we would maybe use a diagnosis or something that would make sure that the other person receiving the text could recall who the patient is without having to go into much detail.
Next question. Did you observe dystonia in Maya's feet?
To be honest with you, I don't recall seeing dystonia. It was a lot of movement of her legs, and maybe there was some inward deviation that I might have kind of described on the physical exam, but it was very hard to do a full physical detail exam, so I can't tell you with certainty if I recall exactly what I saw.
Did you apply SCD?
Yes, I ordered them, and the nurses is actually the ones that apply it.
What date and time?
Let me recall. I'm sure you can go back and see at some point in the records what the orders were, but I believe it was on the 8th.
This sounds excruciating for CRPS. What was Maya's reaction?
I don't recall if they were actually placed, and I didn't recall having a discussion of how that she was feeling with them. It was ordered.
Okay. Next question. Did you document Beata's comments of death and going to heaven? You did document Beata's comments of death and going to heaven. Did you also point this out clearly to Dr. Sally Smith during your October 8th after your rounds phone call to Dr. Sally Smith?
I don't recall talking to Sally Smith about that specific point.
Okay. Are you the one that said, quote, learned today, end quote? If not, do you know now who said it?
On the text messages, I'm assuming?
I believe that's what it's referring to, yes.
No, I didn't. I received that text.
You testified after Maya left your care about October 8th. You had no further contact, but it appears by private text messages you were, quote, keeping up, end quote, on patient Maya. Is that correct?
No. First of all, I took care of her until the 9th. That's a Sunday. And I would have to see the messages because I never took care of her, and I don't think on the messages it says anything of that sort.
Would seeing the messages help?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead and put it up, please.
So I'm the one on blue if you guys are seeing it. So I don't say anything there that I saw her again.
Thank you, Mr. Hunter.
Very briefly, Your Honor, but can I have a text message up again?
Is this going to go more than like a minute?
1 minute.
Okay.
So I'm trying to find the text message. The entry learned today is not you, is that correct?
Learned it? No, that's not me.
That came to you.
That came to me.
Okay.
I am on blue.
Very good. Thank you.
Any follow-up? Dr. Tepa, did you say that doctors at Johns Hopkins are not allowed to use the patient's name outside to protect their identities?
We don't like to use our patients. Well, like, at least me.
Well, I think you said doctors.
I don't like to. I think, I'm trying to use my common practice and say, I can try to generalize, but I don't know what others do. I'm saying the reasons of why.
I'm sorry. We we bring up 2116001?
Do you know Dr. Dees?
I do know Dr. Dees.
And she was on... Was,
Your Honor, I object to him asking this witness about what other doctors are doing.
Sustained.
I'm not a judge. It's just for the use of the name.
Well, Dr. Tepa Sanchez isn't a part of this text exchange, right?
No. It okay. was directed to all doctors.
Sustained. Anything further from the jury? Okay, seeing none, members of the jury, I hope you have a wonderful lunch. I'm going to ask that they be back at 1:30. Do not discuss this case amongst yourselves. Do not do any investigation and receive no information. The jury is out of our presence. We'll be in recess until 1:15. 1:15.
All right. We're in recess.
Okay, everyone's back from lunch. What's the next issue?
Your Honor, we need to make a motion based on the question from plaintiff's counsel through the last witness. Question from Mr. Anderson was, isn't it true you testified you don't have any remorse for any of this? The question was timely objected to. According to the law in the state of Florida.
Mr. Hunter asked me to instruct the jury to disregard the last question, which is what I did.
Yes, Your Honor. We appreciate the instruction. The law requires us to make the timely motion for mistrial at the time of the statement, which we would have done after lunch, but I know Your Honor had to go. Just to make the record on this, Your Honor, State Farm Auto versus Thorne at 110 Southern 3rd 66, a Florida 2nd District case, held that it was improper and mandated reversal for new trial, where plaintiff's counsel suggested in closing argument that the defense was never taking responsibility and shame on these defendants. Again, in Intramed v. Guider at 93 Southern 3rd 503, the 4th District found the plaintiff's argument that the defendants never took responsibility and never apologized was grounds for a new trial. And again, in Cohen versus Philip Morris at 203 Southern 3rd 942, the Florida 4th District also said that counsel's comment during closing argument that the defense never took responsibility and failed to apologize were egregious, unacceptable, and grounds for a new trial. Based on the comment made from plaintiff's counsel and the prevailing case law in Florida, we believe we're entitled to a new trial. We're moving for a mistrial on that basis at this time.
Plaintiffs, what do you want to say?
This is a punitive damages case and the issue of whether or not the defendants are ratifying the behavior, approve of the behavior, and otherwise have decided that. And actually what her statement was, I was getting to, was at the end she says, I did everything fine. I don't believe I did anything wrong to that. My question about have you checked back with her and then do you have any remorse over this? And so in a punitive damages case, it's a little different situation. I haven't studied the defense's case to see whether any of them were punitive damages cases, but the court made an instruction at that time, and we certainly don't believe that it rises in any – I'm not sure it's error but on my part from what I've read. I would have to study it, but it certainly doesn't rise to the level of a mistrial.
Well, one, the court already instructed the jury to disregard the question. There wasn't an answer to the question. The court has previously and will in the future again instruct the jury that they're not, that Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital is not responsible for the, call it the Chapter 39 stuff, just because it's probably the easiest shorthand to say at this time. So, you know, I don't think that there's any need at this point for a mistrial on a question that was asked that was never answered.
Your Honor, the second issue we would like to address briefly is we prepared a special instruction that we'd like the court to deliver now regarding suicide. May I approach with it?
Sure. Has this gone to Mr. Elegant?
It's gone to Mr. Anderson today. It was based on the jury's questioning today, and it goes to the fact that the court has already dismissed on summary judgment the duty owed to Beata Kowalski to prevent her suicide. There were a number of questions from this jury, and I thought it would be the defense's requesting, based on the timeliness of it, that a short statement be read to the jury to make it clear that we do not have a duty to prevent Beata's suicide based on the questions that they're asking.
Your Honor, this is kind of, if anything, I guess I'd characterize as a self-inflicted wound. We asked no questions on cross-examination of Dr. Tessa Sanchez before the jury's questions. The defense brought out from her several statements allegedly made by Beata Kowalski to Dr. Tessa Sanchez about being exhausted, being overwhelmed, and then further statements that later on she stated she was okay with her family. And then stepping into territory we've been prohibited from entering. Then there was discussion on direct regarding the propriety of Baker acting someone and those types of issues. So to give an instruction based on their own questioning, we feel would be unnecessary and improper.
I agree that Mr. Hunter asked the question that elicited this issue, and I don't think there was an objection because I was thinking there would be because this is not an issue in the case because it's already been summary judgmented out. I don't think there's a need for a jury instruction at this time. There you go. What's next?
Do you want to talk about Mr. Graham?
Well, Mr. Anson brings up, we learned just before lunch that the defense plans on calling Detective Graham tomorrow. I think Ms. Crawls and I discussed this briefly. We'd like to discuss this after the jury's gone for the day. Our objection to having Detective Graham testify. We do have a motion for a curative instruction as well that was filed yesterday. And it deals with it's within the motion you looked at earlier. So there were two proposed curative instructions in there. And the one that we'd like to discuss now had to do with the argument concerning Dr. Richards' testimony and the suggestion that the Kowalskis, suggested by defense counsel, that the Kowalskis had moved for a continuance of the dependency proceeding. And for that reason, and then that there was a final hearing scheduled in February.
Does this have anything to do with the witnesses this afternoon?
It does not.
We can talk about that this evening. Anything else about what's going to happen over the next few hours?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. No, Your Honor.
So we have 5 minutes. Why don't we use that for exhibits?
Recent admit, new cough, cough constant.
New what?
Cough.
New cough.
Cough. Cough cough constant, albuterol, or something just given.
It gets into the medication action plan for Ms. It's got to be Ms. Cross.
Yeah, it says it gives the medication, the prednisone, when to give it. Then the emergency action plan for GRASP. And it's in June of 2015.
I don't think this is a legal objection, but it's indecipherable. And
also, Dr. Gondor is one of the
Johnson. Can we just have one per?
Yeah. I didn't hear a legal objection.
Okay. Objection, relevance, hearsay. I'm not even sure who wrote this note, and we can't read it. And it doesn't seem the defense can either.
Well, it's coming from a doctor's office?
Yes, it's Dr. Gondor.
Okay. Court's going to overrule the relevance, and I don't think legibility is a basis to keep something out when we're talking about doctor's handwriting.
3041 is the...
Or my handwriting, for that matter.
I'm sorry. 3041 is the surgery center for the pinky fracture that's been discussed.
For the pinky fracture, okay.
The one in
this is
2020.
2020, okay. Now, how many pages is this one?
It's 26 pages, but I don't know what the objection is. I don't know how they can say it's not relevant. There's been testimony about her visit, when she went, when she delayed, complaints.
It seems like maybe perhaps the amount should be redacted, but no objection otherwise.
The amount?
The bill? You mean the bill?
Yeah, the $10,200.
We can.
I'm not sure if that's reflected on other pages here.
Can you scroll through the other pages real quick? Keep going. These are just normal medical records?
Yeah. That's my understanding, Judge. I haven't personally looked at each page, but that's my understanding.
If the parties agree to take out the
sure.
money, that's fine. But otherwise, the court will receive
all right,
3041, and I'm assuming it's pages 1 through 26 is the complete.
Right. I believe page 1 was the bill. So it'll be 30412 to 26, then, Judge.
Okay. What Ms. Corliss just said. This looks like Dr. Kirkpatrick's stuff.
It is.
Why don't we...
Want to delay that?
Yeah, and sure. We're now at 1:30, so...
Sure.
Let's go ahead and bring in the jury. Everybody. Members of the jury, I want to confirm while you're away, you did not discuss this case amongst yourselves. You did no investigation and received no information. Is that all correct? And did anyone approach you while you were away? And did you see any media coverage about this case while you were away? Did you have a good lunch?
Yes.
Okay, good deal. Did I hear always? I'm glad. That's a very strong statement. It's like, I just want to know what plan that is on, because I don't always get that, so.
I'm sorry, who was the defense calling?
The defense calls nurse practitioner Joanna Klink.
Stand here, face the clerk, and raise your right hand.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
All right, right this way. Yeah, good morning. I'll have to see you in that witness thing.
Do
morning, ma'am.
Good morning.
Good afternoon. Can you please state your name?
Johanna Klink.
And what is your current occupation?
I'm a nurse practitioner.
Can you please give the jury the benefit of your education and training, beginning with college, and any degrees or licenses you obtained over the years, please?
Yes. I have a Bachelor of Science degree in biology. And then I went on to become a nurse, so I have a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing. Then I was a nurse for some years, and then I went back several years ago and became a nurse practitioner, and I'm a family nurse practitioner.
And when did you first become a registered nurse?
2001.
When did you become an advanced practice registered nurse?
2021.
Can you explain the difference between a registered nurse and an advanced practice registered nurse?
Yeah, so a registered nurse is most typically a bachelor's degree. Sometimes it's an associate degree, but for the most part, it's a bachelor's degree. The nursing with a registered nurse does as follows the orders that would be given by a nurse practitioner, which was considered a mid-level, or a physician. So we follow the orders. We monitor vital signs, we monitor the patient, and then we report to the physician. A nurse practitioner is one who works between, is like a, considered a mid-level, and will write orders and make a diagnosis. And registered nurses don't make diagnosis. They follow the orders of a physician or a nurse practitioner or physician assistant.
Now, before you became an APRN, can you describe your work history as a pediatric intensive care nurse?
As a pediatric intensive care nurse, I started in Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C. I was there for 2 years, and I was in the pediatric intensive care. I was for several months in a respiratory care floor in the acute care, and then I went straight to the pediatric ICU. After that, my family and I moved to Seattle, and I worked in the pediatric intensive care in Seattle. While I was in the pediatric intensive care in Seattle, I also had experience in cardiac ICU, some of, and the neonatal ICU, but predominantly it was in the pediatric ICU in Seattle. Then my family and I moved from Seattle to Florida, and then I worked at Johns Hopkins starting 2010, until I believe it was 2020, something like that.
And when we say PICU today, you understand that to be the pediatric intensive care unit?
Right, we call it PICU, but it's PICU, pediatric intensive care unit, yep.
Can you give the jury an idea of what a PICU nurse at All Children's Hospital, or anywhere for that matter, does on a daily basis?
Well, the pediatric ICU, like I said, we follow the orders of the doctor, nurse practitioner. We're there for monitoring vital signs, patient status changes. We report to them when we see changes in status. We administer in the pediatric ICU and in the ICUs very specialized drugs that are not given on, like, acute care floor. So patients come there for those specialized drugs. They come for advanced therapies. They come to be, if they're on ventilators, they have to be in the ICU. It's that's pretty much what we do. Take care of the patient. We give them, we look after their skin. We turn them. We help them. We give them their medications.
Did there come a point in time that you came to be involved with the care of Maya Kowalski?
Yes, I did.
And am I correct that you served as Maya's bedside PICU nurse on October 7th of 2016?
Yes, I did.
And in addition, I believe that you also served as a PICU charge nurse at All Children's Hospital at a few points in Maya's admission as well. Is that correct?
Yes, I was.
Can you please describe for the jury what it is, what role a PICU charge nurse serves?
Well, the PICU charge is more of a supervisory role. We control kind of the flow in and out of the ICU via admissions, transfers, discharges. We're there for staffing. We assign patient assignments to the bedside nurse. We also go to rapid responses on the floor, and that's where in another unit outside of an ICU, if a patient is having some type of a respiratory or cardiac decompensation, the charge nurse will go there and assess the patient if they need advanced treatment, if they need any kind of CPR. We're also there for the code blue. If y'all know, the code blue is when somebody's in a cardiac respiratory arrest. We're there for that. And we monitor patient flow. We keep an eye and make sure that the nurses have what they need for their job that day. We go to the staff meetings, and we also go to like care conference meetings to oversee what's happening with each patient in a big picture.
When you encountered Maya Kowalski at All Children's Hospital on October 7th of 2016, how many years of nursing experience did you have to that point, approximately?
I had about 16 years of pediatric intensive care. No, yeah, it was about 16 years. It
like
was in 2006, yeah.
I'd like to take you back in time to the afternoon of October 7th of 2016 and pick you at All Children's Hospital. On that date, you served as Maya's bedside PICU nurse, correct?
Correct.
Do you remember the afternoon of October 7th?
I do.
Okay. And why is it that you remember that afternoon?
It was an unusual day. It was a very stressful day. I remember distinctly when the admission came in. It was challenging. There were many things that had happened that day that stay in my mind as the day progressed.
We'll talk a little bit more about that, but do you have anything else you remember specifically about that day you want to tell the jury about?
I got the report from the ER nurse and said that this patient was coming to me in the pediatric ICU. She gave me a brief history of Maya's medical history, what was most likely, the plan was for her that she was needing to have. They said that she was having pain and that she had a pain diagnosis, and that she was going to come to the ICU.
And am I correct that when you first encountered Maya and her family, you performed an admission assessment in the PICU?
I did.
Can you please tell the jury what an admission assessment is?
An admission assessment is a complete, like it's a profile of the potential needs that the patient is going to have when they're in the ICU. The admission assessment will be things about pain history, if there's any spiritual needs that they may have, their regular diet, any safety issues, but who lives with them, their whole background. We do and keep that profile of the admission assessment.
And part of that assessment is obtaining a history?
Yes.
And who was it that provided you with Maya Kowalski's medical history during your admission assessment that day?
Mrs. Kowalski was at my side right here. I was at the computer, like right here, and Mrs. Kowalski was reading the computer with me, and she was giving me all the information, like answering the information with me.
Did you observe any language barriers when communicating with Beata Kowalski?
No, there was none. Mrs. Kowalski was a nurse herself. She knew medical terminology. She was proficient in English. There wasn't any communication.
Now, moving a little past the admission assessment, do you have any recollection about difficulties with obtaining vital signs for Maya Kowalski on October 7th?
Yes. When a patient comes into the ICU, we get a full set of vital signs. We get their height, we get their weight. If it wasn't done in the ER, sometimes we'll do it again. But Mrs. Kowalski would not let me take a blood pressure on Maya. She said it was going to cause her pain. And I said, well, we need to have a blood pressure done on her. And she said, well, if she has blood pressure taken, that she needs to have to be pre-medicated for the blood pressure. I'd never heard that in all those years. I'd never heard of it. And I knew that they said that she had pain, but I'd never heard, and I've had patients with pain issues, kids with cancer and things, but she needed to be pre-medicated. And so we held off on it for a little bit. I was able to put her on the monitor. I was able to see her heart rate and her respiratory rate, her oxygen saturations, is how much oxygen her blood had. Those were really, that was critical to have that part. And we deferred the blood pressure for a little bit until I can talk to the doctors and see what do we do to give her pain medication for the blood pressure. So we held off on that for a little bit, and we're going to revisit that.
Now, am I correct that you had the opportunity to observe Maya Kowalski at various points on October 7th?
Yes.
Do you have a recollection about Maya's mobility within her bed while she was in the PICU?
Mrs. Kowalski told me that Maya can't walk because of her CRPS, and I took her at her word for that. I mean, that was okay. I understood she had some issues, medical issues in the past and now. Except then I saw Maya was on her knees on the bed, and she was moving around on the bed on her knees. And I was like, Maya, you're moving on the bed. You're and in the hospital, it's hard to move on your knees on a bed, on any bed. It takes a lot of strength to do that on a bed. But this was an ICU bed that had an air mattress. So with these air mattresses, you sink into the bed. And to be able to move like that while you're sinking, I thought was a little bit suspect. Like, how did you do that when you can't walk? You had no, your legs were so profoundly weak, but she was able to do that. It's like walking on a moon bounce on your knees. It's hard. So I said to, I did mention to Maya, like, Maya, look at, you're doing good. You're doing good. Maybe you could do something. You could walk. Maybe you can try. So I did notice that was unusual.
And at various times from your vantage point while observing Maya Kowalski, were there times that she appeared agitated?
Yes.
Okay. Were there times that she appeared upset?
I'm sorry?
Were there times that she seemed upset?
Yes.
Did she appear withdrawn at times?
Yes.
Were there times, though, that you observed her that she didn't appear upset, agitated, or withdrawn?
This happened most often. It happened very often. And this was strange, too, is because Maya's behavior did change when she was alone with me, or even the other, as I was charged and the nurses would give me a report, they would say the same thing. And I saw this, that when Maya was with her mother, she was a different girl. When she was alone, she could be very sweet, age-appropriate 10-year-old. And she would be a nice little kid. And when Maya's mother came in, the whole demeanor changed. Things changed. And she shut down. She became withdrawn. And that happened consistently.
When you say consistently, can you approximate how many times over the afternoon of October 7th you observed this change in demeanor based on who was present?
So on October 7th, when that happened a couple times. There was one time when I was having a conversation with Maya, and she was talking to me, and then her mother came back in the room, and everything just stopped. She shut down, and it happened then. I don't remember how many times that day that happened, but I remember distinctly that happened, and it happened again on other days in the ICU.
And did you have the opportunity to observe Beata Kowalski's demeanor and behavior in the PICU on that day, October 7th?
Yes.
And how did Beata Kowalski behave in the PICU?
Mrs. Kowalski, when she came in from the beginning, I don't know why, Mrs. Kowalski was very agitated as soon as she came in. I felt like I was starting to walk on eggshells, like she was demanding, she wanted this, she wanted, she, even when she was, when I was doing that medical assessment, or the hospital intake and assessment, she was right there answering the questions. And I was thinking, okay, maybe that's all right. People don't usually do that, but okay. But she did control the whole thing as I'm going through checking, and it was, I could have said, hey, why don't you just answer all of this? So she was very demanding, and I just felt like she'd become agitated, and if I didn't do what she wanted, then she would be agitated.
At any point, do you recall any swearing or yelling in the PICU that day on October 7th?
There were a lot of F-bombs that had happened in that day. I don't remember all the specifics, but I remember the swearing started. Yeah, I do. I remember actually with both of them, with Maya and her mother, that there were a few F-bombs.
Do you recall at any point Maya using profanity directed at any of the staff members at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital?
I do.
Why don't you tell the jury about what you recall?
So it was, I was charge nurse on that day when it was directed at the staff that I witnessed. In the hospital, in the ICU, we have like a morning rounds, and you have the team together, and there's the residents, and dietary is there, pharmacy's there, nursing's there, everybody is there, and we go to the patient into the room and then talk about what happened that night. And then what the plan is for the day. And I was the charge, so I go along with the rounds to each patient. And we walked into Maya's room, and Bea Tepa, Dr. Tepa, was the attending that day. So we had just walked in, and I think she says something like, hi, good morning, and she's like, well, you know, we're gonna have a new day, or we're gonna, you know, talk about your plan of care, which is what she normally says. And then, Your Honor, is it all right if I say it?
First, objection, hearsay. Second, narrative.
Sustained.
And not responsive to the question. Strike the last 10 lines.
Just ask your next question.
Why don't you tell the jury about the incident where Maya Kowalski used profanity in your presence?
Well, in my presence, so she was saying the F-bomb, I want my F in sedation. Then she called Dr. Tepa. I was there, and she called Dr. Tepa an F and F and AH. She said, shut up, you F and AH.
Was that something that you found unusual in your experience as a PICU nurse?
Yes.
And why was that?
Well, here's this 10-year-old little girl, and it was unprovoked. Like, it was a morning, we just walked in. I don't know why that happened, I don't know where that came from, but she said the whole word, and we were shocked. I was shocked. I saw Dr. Tepa's face. It was like, I don't think anybody had ever said that to her. She gasped, and we all looked at each other and were in shock.
Objection, non-responsive to the question.
Overruled.
Ms. Klink, I'd like to now go through a few of the entries that you made in Maya Kowalski's medical chart the afternoon and evening of October 7th, okay? Clay, can you please put up Joint Exhibit 1001-2722? It is in evidence. And I'd like to draw your attention specifically to the note here from 1700. It's under the text note T900. It says, I want my sedation. I want to eat. I feel like I'm having a heart attack. Mom replied, well, honey, if you have a heart attack, at least the doctors will treat you. Do you see that, Nurse Klink?
Yes, I do.
And is that a note that you entered on October 7th?
Yes.
Why is it that you put that entry into Maya Kowalski's medical chart?
Well, there were a couple reasons why I put that in. First of all, she said that, and that's why I put it in quotes that way. Secondly, I thought it was unusual that she said, I want my sedation. She didn't say, I'm in pain, you know, nurse, my arm hurts, mom, my leg hurts, my back hurts, I'm in pain, I have an owie, somebody help me because it hurts. She said, I want my sedation. And I thought that that was unusual for a 10-year-old. Kids don't ask to be sedated. They ask for something because they have something hurts, they have an owie, they have something bothers them. They'll say that, but they don't ask for sedation. So that I thought was very strange. So I put that in. And then the other thing is,
I was going to get to the next one, Nurse Klink. There's a second note here, T901, from 5 p.m. on the 7th. It says, can you see it? We've got it highlighted here for you, I believe.
Yeah.
Quote, I'm tired of all these lies. My life is a lie, end quote. Clay, yes. Can you highlight that, please?
Objection. Read for the record. No strikes. Let's try not to read the records.
Nurse Klink, do you see the entry here that's highlighted before you? Can you tell me or describe for the jury, rather, what was going on around the time that this statement that you quoted from Maya occurred?
I was alone with Maya in the room in her hospital room when this happened. She was saying that she was hungry and she wanted a donut, but she said about the sedation part, and then she said, I'm tired of all these lies, my life is a lie. That struck me very hard. I don't know how to explain it. When she said that, she was, it sounded to me like it was a cry for help. Like there was she was desperate. She said those words to me, and I said, you know, Maya, what do you mean by that? And Maya's, before that happened, Maya said to me, where's my mother? And I said, well, I think your mom is with the doctors. They're having a meeting. And then she was saying, I want my donut, I want my sedation. And then she said that. So Mrs. Kowalski and I believe Mr. Kowalski were in a meeting with the doctors. This was right after she was admitted. I think this was like soon after she was admitted. I didn't have any background. I didn't really know that much about Maya. I certainly didn't know anything along like now that I look back on this, but that struck me as very, very unusual. It was like a cry for help. I don't know, so I put it in there, and as soon as it looked like she was about to answer me, and I remember distinctly, she paused when I asked her, Ryan, what do you mean by that? She paused, and then she looked like she was about to answer, and then Mrs. Kowalski came in the room, back from the meeting with the doctors, and then that was the end of it. And this was the first day. This was right after she was admitted to the ICU. And I thought it was unusual for a 10-year-old to say, I'm tired of all these lies. My life is a lie.
What do you mean that this was the end of it? I think you just told the jury that when Ms. Kowalski came back in.
Well, that was the end. Maya became withdrawn again and shut down. And I went back and did the rest of my work and checking on meds or whatever, but that was the end of it. That was the end of the conversation. She said that. I asked her to explain more. It looked like she was about to, and then her mom came back.
In your almost 20 years of nursing experience now, have you ever had a child tell you that their life was a lie?
Never.
Were you concerned by that statement?
Yes, I was very concerned. I mean, I don't know anybody, any kid, any child that would say such a thing. And she said that, exactly that. And that did strike me as, why would you say that? What does that mean? That meant something. And I could see she said it.
Going back to your entry here about Maya requesting sedation, do you recall the tone of her voice when she was asking for sedation?
Maya was agitated. She was angry. She was yelling. She would say, I want my effing sedation. She was upset. She was agitated.
In your years of nursing experience, have you ever had a 10-year-old ask you for sedation?
I've never had any child ask me for sedation, to say, I want to be sedated.
Now moving forward, after you were the bedside PICU nurse on October 7th, am I correct, you were the charge nurse on the PICU for a series of days after October 7th?
Yes.
And you were charge nurse for a few days while Maya Kowalski was in the PICU, is that correct?
Correct.
Can you please describe for the jury some of the recollections you have serving as a charge nurse during those days while Maya was in the PICU?
Objection calls for narrative answer specifically.
Sustained.
Okay. During the period of time that you were a charge nurse on the PICU, did you have any interactions with Maya Kowalski or her parents?
Yes.
Okay, can you please tell the jury what you recall about this?
Objection again. Narrative. Overruled in time.
You can answer.
Can you repeat that last part?
Yeah. So, during the period of time that you were a charge nurse in October in the PICU, can you please describe some of your interactions with Maya and her parents?
I was in one of the care conferences.
And let me stop you. I'll represent you. There was a care conference on October 11 of 2016. Does that sound about right to you?
Yes.
Okay. And why don't you explain for the jury what a family care conference is?
A family care conference is when you get the different teams together, and sometimes there's discharge planning. You get the different teams. Sometimes if it's a child with lung issues, then the pulmonologist would be there. The charge nurse is there. The physicians are there. The parents are there, and that's a care conference. This is where you get everybody together, all on the same page at the same time, and figure out a plan of care.
And what do you recall about that meeting?
I remember it was in the morning. I was charge nurse that day. I was there as an observational. It was the physicians were there with Mr. and Mrs. Kowalski, and I remember that the ICU team were talking with the parents about the plan of care, what they're going to do with Maya's care. And I know that they were working towards trying to get Maya into some type of a stable medication or stable regimen where she wasn't on a lot of these ICU meds. Some of these meds are dangerous meds, and to try to wean her off those meds and get her into some other type of, like a therapy, cognitive therapy, maybe just some physical therapy, occupational therapy, and try to get her stabilized on that and take her down from a lot of these ICU meds that were like ramping up.
And what do you recall about Mr. Kowalski and his position about what the doctors were requesting and recommending during that care conference?
Mr. Kowalski and Mrs. Kowalski were sitting kind of on this corner. I was right here. And he said to her, he's like, you know, I think this makes a lot of sense. I think we should do it. I think it's reasonable. Why don't we give it a try? It's what they're saying, it's okay. We should just try it and just see it. They seem like it seems like it's a reasonable plan.
Narrative answer. Objection, motion to strike. Sustained.
Okay. During this conversation, the care plan conference, what do you recall Ms. Kowalski saying in response to Mr. Kowalski's request to stay at the hospital?
Say that again?
at this care conference we've been discussing, what do you recall about what Beata Kowalski was saying in response to Mr. Kowalski's suggestion that we listen to what the doctors at All Children's wanted to do?
Mrs. Kowalski did not want to entertain any other plan other than continuing with the ketamine and the propofol and the ICU drugs.
Did it appear to you as though Mr. Kowalski wanted to have Maya Kowalski stay at Johns Hopkins?
Yes.
And at the end of the care conference, do you recall if the Kowalskis agreed to stay or not?
I believe they did. That would, you'd have to check on with the physicians to find out the final, but I believe that, yeah, they stayed. They chose to stay.
Do you recall during this family care conference on October 11 of 2016 any threats to the Kowalskis that they would be arrested if they didn't stay at All Children's Hospital?
No.
Have you ever, in 20 years of nursing, heard any hospital staff member threaten a parent with arrest if they wanted to leave against medical advice?
Objection, foundation, predicate, and sustained hearsay in fucking comportments.
More live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now.